I'm curious because I knew you to be a humble man when I met you years ago, and I'm wondering how is
humble in so many ways.
Yes, indeed. I'm just curious, how has success affected your music?
Success. Well, I mean, first of all, you're taking a lot for granted. You know, I obviously on paper it looks like a certain number of nice things have happened, and I definitely have the ear of you know, some more people these days than I did in 98. But, you know, from the inside, it's a process of really trying to learn what I can as I go and try to be a better player and try to understand things that I, you know, on day three that I didn't understand on day one. And so that's by way of saying, you know, from the inside, it just feels like I'm still in the same kind of bag. I try to play the music that I hear in my head as well as I can and connect with people. And so how has it affected me? I mean, I'm older. I'm further down the line. And I definitely have access to more people, and I definitely feel more comfortable in many situations that I was, you know, younger and geekier and less comfortable in 10, 11, 12 years ago. But, you know, as I say, it's all a process, and I'm really shooting for the time when I'm, you know, 70 years old, and then I'm going to really be ready to tell you something.
Well, and Kurt, I in no way meant to underscore the work and the toil.
No, not at all. Yeah. I'm that's an honest answer from the inside. For me, I'm not, you know, the finish line is when you've made your last record and the doctor says you have 6 months. And then you try to make one more record.
Well, speaking of that, I'm looking right now at the Rush release on your latest recording, The Gate, and I've had a chance to listen to it, and this is on Concord Records, and yeah. To my ear, it sounds consistent in some ways. You continue to reinterpret jazz classics on this recording, as well as composing some original lyrics and some tunes.
I once had a girl, or should I say, she once had me. She showed me her room, isn't it good, Norwegian wood. She asked me to stay, and she told to sit anywhere. So I looked around and I noticed there wasn't a chair. I sat on her rug, biding my time, drinking her talked until 2, and then she said, it's time.
It also appears that this is a unique project for you on several counts. Your first collaboration with Don Was. As the producer, he produced recordings for the Rolling Stones, Bonnie Raitt, Bob Dylan, plus a sort of interesting choice of materials, including tunes by King Crimson, Stevie Wonder, The Beatles, not to mention the Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock and Don Grolnick tunes. Was this a unique process for you, recording The Gate?
Was it a unique process? It was unique you get a Don Was into the mix, and his belief in us and in me and in what I wanted to accomplish on this record really gave confidence to everybody who was a part of and who surrounded this production. Including, you know, the label, obviously, and the manager, and I don't know, whoever else might have had a hand in it. Because Don's reputation is so much more substantial in the larger music world than mine or anybody else's who was attached to the project. Then if he says, that's a good idea, let's do that, then everybody says, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do that, which is really nice because Don is such a giving and supportive and forgiving person, and he just really wanted to be about what I wanted to be about. So it was kind of like, you know, saying, you know, I could whisper to him, hey, man, what if we tried this? And he'd be like, yeah, man, let's do that. Hey, man, Kurt wants to try this thing. And then it would just be on because Don said it was cool. And not that anybody was going out of their way to mistrust me or to not rely upon my abilities as an artist who knows what's good for him. But, you know, it just means a lot to have a big brother like that in the room to amplify and verify what it is that you're saying.
So you were not encumbered by a sense of awe of this man. You still were able to express what you really felt, not second-guess yourself.
Well, like I say, he's such a compassionate person, and he doesn't walk around being like, well, man, the Stones this and the Stones that. I mean, he loves the music, and he brought into the room a real sense of love for me and love for Lawrence and love for all the musicians and has a way of putting cats at ease, you know, right away. And that's a big, big gift for somebody of his stature to bring into a room.
You also, I remember back in 1998, going back to my first personal encounter with you, that we kind of dropped on you an extracurricular activity. We wanted you to do an educational session, and it was just a mixed bag of people. And I feel like back at that time, maybe you were... You've expanded on your lectures and the quote unquote educational or lecture demonstration aspect of your career as well. Because I remember there was like a 9-year-old kid up there, and you were you might have been goofing. Because if you were, you goofed on me too, because you were doing some scat singing, and you laid out a phrase, man, that it was like, you know, a Coltrane horn solo, and said to the kid, okay, now you do that. And everybody in the audience, kind of like what you did at the live recording at the Green Mill, which was pretty cool.
Oh, man, just having fun with people.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. But this, and I also... I'm aware of the lecture you did for a friend of mine in Columbia, Missouri, which bringing in religious or philosophical elements to what you do as well. Are you still engaged in these sort of activities? Do you find yourself being asked to do this sort of thing more and more?
Well, I mean, I definitely give my share of master classes and increasingly individual lessons here in New York. And I think that's just a regular part of, you know, the gig, man. You come on, and many times the people who are putting on a jazz concert, who are producing it, get a certain amount of their funding from the fact that it's also going to be an educational experience as such. So, yeah, I mean, I'm significantly more prepared to walk into a room and, you know, sort of just lay it out there in a way that is... ready to go. I've had that many more years under my belt, and I've had that many more experiences, and I know what the story is that I need to have happen in order to get the most information to people in the shortest amount of time. So that's what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm. I think there's the master class part of it, which I'm kind of curious. There's probably something that you get from that as well. I mean, particularly when you work with gifted students. It would seem like there would be a return on your investment for those efforts.
Well, I hope so, you know, but, you know, the ultimate return is going to be, you know, am I contributing to the number of listeners? Am I contributing to the number of people in an educated audience? And am I ultimately seeding the clouds for another generation of singers?
Exactly. I find that in the concert venues, more and more presenters are looking for another way for people to grasp this music other than just listening to it, which I suppose can't hurt. I mean, anything that can add to the experience. But there's more and more. I mean, we're doing it here at the Walton Arts Center. So, and people appreciate it, I think. They really do. If they can feel another connection to the artist...
Yeah, well, you know, it's like going to hear, it's like going to a contemporary art gallery. It definitely helps to have the artist stand up and say, okay, well, this is what I'm about. This is the history of what I'm coming from. And this is the way I feel about it. And this is why I use these colors. And, you know, if you can give a context for people, put a frame around the music a little bit more, then people are, you know, sort of regular people, civilians, if you will, are going to have an easier access to what the experience is, and they'll be able to enjoy it more.
What can you tell me about the band you'll be bringing to Fayetteville, Arkansas on February 5th?
Well, I'll be bringing my excellent, good working unit at this point, Lawrence Hobgood, playing piano, my collaborator, as we mentioned before, of coming up on 17 years now. Harish Raghavan, a great young bass player who's also from Chicago but who lives in New York now. And, he's just really making a name for himself. Ulysses Owens playing drums. He's a member of the first Juilliard jazz undergraduate school. So he's among the first graduating members of the Juilliard jazz program. And he's been out with Christian McBride and a bunch of people. He's just a great player. People love to hear him. They love to watch. They love to be a part of it. And John McLean, another friend from Chicago, who's joining us playing guitar and helping us really punch this thing into the next year.
Well, we will try to make you as comfortable as we can during your stay in Fayetteville. And there's a crowd waiting to see you, Kurt. So Godspeed.
Thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate all the homework and all the support over the years.
Robert Ginsberg, the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz every Friday night, recently spoke with Kurt Elling. The Kurt Elling Quintet is scheduled to perform at 8 and again at 10 Saturday night at Walton Arts Center. More information available at 443-5600 or waltonartscenter.org. And the music we heard during this piece is from Kurt Elling's forthcoming CD titled The Gate. It will be available a week from today. This is Ozarks at Large.
A mystery of blue in green.